Welcome to the return of the Primal Endurance Podcast. This is your host, Brad Kearns, and we are going on a journey to a kinder, gentler, smarter, more fun, more effective way to train for ambitious endurance goals. Visit primalendurance.fit to join the community and enroll in our free video course. I want to discuss the incredible benefits of red light therapy and how you can get started with Mito Red Light. Mito, like mitochondria, red light makes the premier light therapy devices in the world and at incredibly affordable prices. I stand in front of my Mito Pro 1500 unit every morning, carefully exposing my eyeballs, other important balls, and my entire body to special wavelengths of red and near-infrared for red light. When I tell people about my daily devotion to red light therapy, they typically ask, does this stuff really work? And the answer is yes, and there are thousands of studies supporting its effectiveness. Here's how. It's called photobiomodulation, where specific wavelengths of red and near-infrared light, red's visible, near-infrared is not visible, that's why it looks like only half of your panel's working, these wavelengths help mitochondria in cells throughout your body produce more energy and clear waste products more efficiently. Red light exposure helps mobilize nitric oxide trapped in the mitochondria and allows oxygen to return to the cell and increase ATP production. The benefits are proven again and again for skin health, muscle recovery, joint pain, and numerous inflammatory conditions. Red light therapy is also beneficial for circadian rhythm alignment, because we generally get far too little direct sunlight and too much indoor blue light from screens and light bulbs at the wrong times. You don't hear much about this benefit of red light therapy, but when I turn on those lights, first thing in the morning, as soon as I wake up, I walk across the hall, I stand in front of the panels, and I feel instantly awake and energized. And believe me, there's a lot of days where Mr. Health Guy here wakes up feeling a little groggy and a little whiny, like I don't want to get up now and get into my morning exercise routine. But when I stand in front of the lights, in 1 minute, I swear I feel wide awake. I get all that grogginess out naturally. It's super powerful, super effective. Besides all the healing and the cellular benefits, I also love it for being a natural wake-up machine. You have to try red light therapy. I am certain that you will become a devoted user. And guess what? Mito Red Light offers a 60-day no-risk trial period and a special 5% discount for BRAD podcast listeners. Just visit Mito Red Light, M-I-T-O, redlight.com, and use the code BRAD on any of their products. Go for it today and get started on your red light journey. Get ready for a very high energy human by the name of Peter Park. He is a highly regarded personal trainer. He's a legend in the fitness industry, having worked with many professional athletes and Hollywood celebrities, and also known for hanging with Lance Armstrong and getting him doing some good work in the gym during his Tour de France days. He has a great facility in the beautiful Santa Barbara area called Platinum Fitness, and his background is really interesting. So we're going to have a wide-ranging discussion of how he came to be this very enthusiastic and passionate trainer, and you're going to love how this comes out in his voice and his discussions of his lifelong dedication to getting people fit and healthy and performing at their peak, including young athletes, including business leaders, and including the Hollywood types. But Peter is both an extreme endurance athlete and also has an interesting background in powerlifting. And he talks about how he went from 200-pound Rip City strong guy to total immersion into the Ironman scene. And we crossed paths a little bit in the Santa Barbara area when I was there in school and a little bit after training as a pro triathlete, and he was coming up. And man, this guy was just a legendary trainer. The stories that people told around town, that no one could keep up with this guy's work ethic. And you're going to hear about some of his reminiscing about the amazing workouts, riding his bike, down the California coast and just training for hours and hours. He completed 23 Ironman triathlons in his career. So he's been to the very edge of peak performance and explored the limits of human endurance. When you think about it, he's probably exercised and trained at a level that few other humans have in the history of the world, because he still maintains a very ambitious training schedule in the gym. And you'll hear him describe over the course of the show all the fun stuff that he likes to do with sprinting and hill sprints. He was also a competitive volleyball player in college. And this extreme training stuff didn't even take hold until, let's say, the 80s, perhaps, right? There wasn't that much going on before that, the advent of triathlon and ultra running and so forth. So you are going to hear from someone who has experience in all different levels of athletic training, all different types, and has brought it all together to form his philosophy that he dispenses at Platinum Fitness. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. We talk about the great performances of the Norwegian triathletes today, which we're both fascinated with. And that brings up the topic of energy balance. Peter has experimented with so many different diets. And so we talk about this ideal of being fully fueled to lead a healthy, active, energetic lifestyle. And this guy is doing it like nobody else. He's in the gym all day long, caring for clients, getting his training in. We're both the same age, 57. He's a tremendous inspiration. Here we go with the show, Peter Park. Peter Park connecting from maybe the nicest, most amazing city in the world, Santa Barbara. You're the local hero, man. You've been there forever.
Forever. Yeah, and I don't see myself leaving either.
And the Platinum Fitness facility, the beautiful website, you can see what's going on there. And we'll talk all about the innovative training strategies that you've developed and implement to your clients. But I think we should start with your amazing endurance career. That's where we connected way back when I was training in Santa Barbara. We crossed paths a little bit. You were too tough for me, so I had to go away with your tail between my legs. But this is what, 23 Ironmans? That's what you
Nothing like that,
I mean, that's like up there. I don't think there's too many people that have done that many. Ken Glaw did 30 in a row in Ironman Hawaii, but that's a lot of
30 in a row.
that's a
He
lot of
did 30
medals,
in a row.
man. Yeah, he did
Yeah, and a
30 in a
lot.
row.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. I'm not 30 iron. I mean, not Hawaii's, but
Yeah, but
total.
you know, most people do one or two or three or 12 if they're really
Yeah.
long term, but that was a grind. What was that all about? How'd you get into it?
It's funny because I started out as a volleyball player, which is funny. I got a scholarship out of high school to play volleyball. So that's where I started in that world. I mean, from the time I was 10, I was obsessed with ball, beach volleyball, indoor, and whatever. So I played there, I actually went to University of Hawaii my first 2 years, and then I quit. They didn't have a libero. That's the position where like you can be short and play back row and
Yeah.
serve. They didn't have that back then. So I was a setter, but I couldn't. I was just in the front row. I just couldn't block. I was just, I was like, they called me tips because I don't get my tips over the net, when I blocked, and it was just. But I played and I loved it. And but then after volleyball, it's funny because then when I was like 13, I worked in a really powerful gym here. I mean, it was a grungy little hole in the wall on Garden Street, downtown, seedy. But the best power lifters in the world worked out there. So right after volleyball, it was funny. I got into this very big powerlifting, bodybuilding. I got to like 200 pounds. I got to watch the best of the best. Train. And so I kind of had this perfect pedigree to become a trainer because I did the volleyball thing, the team sport. So then I did the whole bodybuilding, powerlifting. I got to watch, I was always intrigued by the science and how they did it, what rep range they used and how much they rested and, all that stuff. So I was always super intrigued with that. And then my sister was a world-class runner. I mean, she ran like a 31, 32, 10K. She won NCAA 10,000 meter 1 year. And then I
Wow.
just one day I go, I know I could beat you. And of course she beat me by like 5 minutes. And then literally 6 months later, 5 months later, I did my first, I did the Honolulu Marathon and I ran like 2:35 or 6. I'm like, okay, I have definitely obviously have some talent in this. And so I just completely switched gears and I did an Ironman like 4 months later. So within a year, I did an Ironman. I did New Zealand and I was 10th place and I was like 9:04, 9:03. And that's when I go, okay, I can do this, but of course I did every wrong thing. And, you know, I'd run like 100 miles. I'd take the train. I'd ride to San Diego, take the train home, swim with the age group kids. You know, I was crazy. I mean, like Mike said, I was crazy. Like, I would just do the, I would just pick the strongest, like Eric Check. He was a cyclist at the time. I would just ride with him, whatever he did. And then I'd pick the best runner and do whatever he did. And then I'd swim with the age group kids, you know, and of course I had some really good races and I'd crash and burn for a few months and then come back. It was that constant thing. And so, but I had some really good results, but I, you know, watching especially how these Norwegians and the guys are training, I'm like, oh God, I could have been so much better if I did it right. You know, I just, it was a wild west back then. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. But I had a lot of fun, I'll tell you that. I mean, it was, the journey was incredible. You know, just a test to see how far I could go. And we, you know, we just didn't know what we were doing. It was fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, sometimes I think the guys get too caught up in all that stuff and they lose the, you know, the fun we had and the, you know, just like it was so, you know, unique back then.
Yeah. The best adventures, in my opinion, were these long distance bike rides. And I used to love to do the one way, like you describe. And, you know, you're just riding down the California coast. I used to ride home. I lived in the San Fernando Valley when I was a student at UCSB, when I switched from the running teams to triathlon.
Right.
And I'd just show up at my house and it was like the greatest feeling that I would, I could cover that distance on my bike, you know?
Yeah. We used to take a we'd go to San Diego, we'd go to like soup plantation and just like,
and you know, like who are these
take
guys?
Our backpacks and take like 500 muffins and put them in the backpack.
Oh yeah.
Get on the train and then go home. But it was fun though. I miss those days actually.
So wait, you're saying that you came out of the bodybuilding gym at 200 pounds and then what was the timeline?
Yeah,
there?
And I lost, well, what happened? I mean, it was funny because I was huge. I was squatting ridiculous amounts of weight and then, you know, I just followed these, you know, once I get into something, I kind of go 100%. And I went full on in for like 3 years and then I don't know. It was my sister. That whole the endurance thing just intrigued me, and I just went full for it. And what happened is I had from a kid, I had this jaw that kind of went to one side, and so I had to have like jaw surgery and my mouth wired shut for 8 weeks, and I lost like 60 pounds. And I mean, from being bodybuilding, I was just freaking shredded. I mean, I'd run down the street like down Cabrillo, and people looking like you're freak. You know, because I had like roadmap veins in my stomach, and this was just coming. It was like I cut for a contest or something, and then I just got addicted. You know, just from there, I just started watching like Ironmans on TV, and I just okay. And then I just completely switched gears to that world. You know, after that.
So you got the weight off through the jaw surgery, you're saying?
Well, it just kicked it in. It was like, you know, when Lance had cancer and lost all that weight, it was like, you know, I went from like 200 pounds to like 160. You know, in like 8 or 10 weeks. I was training a lot too. I was running and, you know, it was all new to me. You know, when you first start training, your body's not used to it. And I was like, my metabolism just went crazy. And I was only 21, you know, 22. So that I had the age on my side, but it was crazy, you know, how quick I just got good at it. Other than, you know, the injuries I got from trying to train like a pro in the first, you know, 4 months.
Out of the gate.
Yeah.
Is there anything, any attributes that transfer over from putting in that hard work in powerlifting and getting super strong and then trying to be an endurance athlete?
Yeah. I was always one that lifted weights during, I always believed in it. I always thought it helped me for strength. Like when I did ultra running, anything like that, I could outrun anyone in the strong stuff, like going up Figaro Mountain or something like that, you know, 110 miles into the ride. I just always felt that strength helped me. You know, some people will argue against it, but for me, I loved lifting. I just felt it kept me, you know, gave me a little bit of an edge. It kept me healthy because it kept me balanced. I felt in my body, like, you know, I never got, you know, really a lot of imbalances. I lifted always. I never stopped. You know, I tapered, of course, and, you know, before races, but I always believed in strength training just from the get-go, you know, even, you know,
I mean, there's plenty of great articles, books, experts talking about how beneficial it is, but I think the challenge is to balance everything because you only have so much energy, and I had a huge struggle with that because I knew it was important, but sometimes you just bump up against your maximum capability to put in work every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, but I always, you know, from those powerlifting guys, there was a few doctor, teach guy, you know, really good physiologists that, you know, always taught me, you know, to never train to failure, keep the reps low. You know, you do all this endurance already. Don't go out there and make it, you know, don't go in and do, you know, 500 squats and then go on the leg press and do 100 reps. And he goes, you know, that I learned from a young age, that's bullshit. You know, like I would go and do like, you know, 5 sets of 3 hex, you know, deadlifts, or I do a few, you know, I would just keep the reps low and never train to failure. And I always could recover pretty well. It's the times when you go like that hypertrophy, 10 to 12 reps, and you grind it out. That's where the next day you just have all that, you know, that lactic acid and soreness, and you just can't recover. Yeah. So it's kind of, people always, you know, like, what do you mean? Like 3 reps makes you big. I'm like, no, you're quite wrong. It's the opposite. Like, you go 10 reps, you're going to get big. You keep it 3 reps, it's much more nervous system. And then, you know, you're not going to get, you know, I always wanted to be as strong as I could be without putting on a lot of mass. And I think that, you know, 5 reps, 6 reps is kind of that crossover where you're going to get some hypertrophy if you go in those ranges. But if I kept them like 3 to 4 and, you know, just worked on my technique, and, you know, I'd always did a lot of swings and, you know, kettlebell swings, stuff that, you know, I knew what would make me big. I didn't go and do, you know, incline press for, you know, 10 reps, super slow or anything like that. I knew what would, I mean, because I have a body that, you know, can get big if I'm not careful. I have to watch, you know, I mean, I can get, if I wanted to get big, I could, you know, I just knew which techniques would get me, you know, too big in my upper body. Cause I can get super barrel chested if I'm not careful.
Yeah, it also occurs to me that for the endurance athlete, you're trying to develop complementary skills that'll support your performance. And if you go in the gym and do a bunch of reps, it still seems today that a lot of endurance athletes just keep that endurance mentality.
No, I don't get
whatever
it.
They're doing.
I mean, I just laugh when I see that. I'm like, what do you mean? Like CrossFit for endurance athletes, I think, is not smart. I mean, I don't have nothing against CrossFit, but like going in and doing those 20-minute Metcons and your heart rates. Like, why are you just, I mean, you're just wrecking your, it's one more stress your body has to go through and not recover from your bike rides and whatever else your main thing, you know, I think it's the same for any athlete, you know, the baseball players I train, anyone, you know, their sport is their sport. You can't make the training another sport to recover from. So right. It's like, yeah. You know, I mean, so I try to keep it, you know, there's times of the year, like the baseball players will come in here in like a couple of weeks and I can work them really hard for like a month or two. Because they're not playing baseball. That's one time a year I can really, you know, hammer them out and get some really good strength for, you know, because, you know, they play so long and so many games that give them a huge base of strength and they can carry it all the way through the season if they just maintain during the season. I mean, with little. So if you get that big, just like an endurance athlete, if you get that big base of fitness or cardio or whether it's cardio strength, you can, you know, you can do very little in the season and still maintain.
Well, it's especially important at the elite level when your main objective is to make it through the season. So like an NBA guy, imagining someone like that coming in and doing a CrossFit session during or anywhere near the season is just a recipe for breakdown, it seems like.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's kind of like, I've done it so long now. It's just, if you make mistakes, you kind of write it down, you kind of just figure out. And over the years, I've just kind of formed like a formula that I just go, okay, this has worked, this hasn't worked, this, you know, and I know what kind of volume they can take just by, you know, I mean, an athlete can walk in the gym and I know if they're tired, very easy to see, just by their attitude when they're warming up, you know, you can just see if they're tired, you can just look at them and go, okay, no, you're off this, you know, you can see it when they, you know, a lot of them try to fake it, but you can't fake, you know, they yell at you when you tell them to do one little thing or something. I mean, you can just see it. So I'm pretty good at knowing, okay, I push people, you know, to their, you know, their potential, but I don't, if you go over it, it's worthless training. So I've learned, you know, cause I used to think, you know, when I first started training people, you know, what do you mean you can't do an Ironman? Everyone should be able to do that. You know, I was just dumb. I was just young. And I just, you know, I was just trained everyone way too hard. And I've learned over the years, like, okay, you know, more isn't always better. And, you know, Pavel, the kettlebell guy, has become a really good friend of mine. We talk all the time, and he's really, you know, he's really got me into like a lot of the Russian, you know, he'd always say, hey, why do you think Russian powerlifters last 20 years and Americans last 4 years? You know, won Olympics. Because, you know, the Russians never train, they rarely train to failure. They train low reps, that you know, they strain that sweet spot and just do it over and over and over again with good form. They don't get caught up in the, you know, what's hot and what's not, you know, the mass volume training or whatever the catchword of the month is. And they just have that, you know, okay, you build, you know, you rest, you know, and it's, you know, it's the simplicity of it is kind of where it's at if you do it right.
Oh my gosh. These topics are so much more important to me now at age 57, because there's no wiggle room anymore. And no. You have to learn to do that under the radar strategy, or grease the groove, as Pavel says, rather than just being the blaster, the king of the town. But yeah, so back to your endurance career, you know, knowing what you know now, or how that played out, you felt like you made some mistakes in the area of overtraining.
You know, not you know, on my easy rides, easy runs, not going easy enough. I'd say I would always kind of go junky pace. You know, too much of that. Getting caught up in, okay, I'm going to do a 40-mile recovery, then seeing some guy on the freeway going to Refugio and just like freaking throwing chair to the wind. And go, this fucking guy's not going to beat me. You know, and then just little stupid stuff like that. That I just, you know, I think I'll jump in this LA marathon 2 weeks before New Zealand. And then, you know, I go there, I'm like, okay, I ran 240, which wasn't that fast for me back then, but I get there 2 weeks and I wonder why I'm like destroyed at New Zealand, you know? So
doing an Ironman 2 weeks after a marathon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just all the kind of, the list goes on. I just was, you know, I didn't have a coach. I was always kind of experimenting with myself. I think, like I said, if I had one of those coaches like the Norwegian guys where they say, hey, you're doing this today and this is how much food you're eating and you got to have 10,000 calories because we're doing this today, and having your energy balance stay all the same. And I think I didn't eat enough a lot of times and my nutrition wasn't locked on. So I've been really curious about watching what those guys do, and I've listened to all the podcasts, and it's just, you know, they're so spot on with their diet, and, you know, they don't want to see veins in their stomach and rip. They, you know, they look heavy to me, like not heavy, but not like a normal endurance person.
Yeah.
And I love the way they talk about how they want to keep always their energy balance positive. They never let it get low. And, you know, that's how, you know, how they can train that long. I mean, of course, I think, you know, to me, it seems like I'm guessing, but it seems like the Norwegians took like, you know, they had like 100 kids or something, bombed them all, and like five lasted. Oh, these guys can all take the volume, and then they train them right, and they have a VO2 of 90, and they can put in the volume. You know, that's what's going to happen. You know, I mean, they're going to, and they have good training now, and they're, you know, their coaches knows exactly their body temperature and what they should eat, and, you know, it's amazing now to see how far they've come with all this, you know, these things.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with Blumenfeld performing the way he does. Coming in at around 5'9", 170, because he does not match physique of the extreme endurance athlete that we've always thought was this fat burning machine and lean and mean. And you know, I'm wondering, like, we also know that the performance limiter at the most difficult sports like bodybuilding or Tour de France is a lot of times how many calories one can process in a day.
Yeah.
And so maybe this guy has transcended our model of fat adapted endurance training, and he must be mainlining a bunch of carbohydrates.
Oh, he is. I'm a student of, like, when someone does this well, like, okay, what can I learn? What are they doing that, you know, not for me, but for people that I train, and I just intrigued by, okay, fuck, there are 10 guys went under 740 or 45 or under 8. I'm like, that's crazy. What are they doing? Like, I mean, the bikes aren't that much better, or, you know, it's not that. So just the way he talked, I've listened to, you know, every podcast they've done probably, and, you know, the eating, and they stay in that positive energy balance. They don't do any massage or any of that stuff, you know, no cold plunges, none of that shit. They just go, okay, sleep and eat, and that's all we need. And I mean, that's pretty much what they do. And it's simple, and they have the formula down, okay. Ride, you know, 10 by 10 minutes at your, you know, this, you know, millimoles of lactate, and they got it down to a slide, and they don't, and everyone's different. They have it down and how many calories you need that day. And, you know, can you imagine if you had that? I mean, it would take a lot of the guesswork out of, you know, and then they have a, you know, like a thermometer up their butt to see what their body temperature is. And, you know, so it's, you know, I can see, like, if you had someone like Lance back in when he was 24 doing that training, he probably would have done the same thing.
Mm.
you know, if he, you know, Lance, who could swim, he could run, you know, if he had that kind of, you know, training and, you know, with his talent, I mean, I think he probably could have gone probably what these guys are doing.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I thought he was going to go busted open when he was 37 or whenever he turned to triathlon.
I think he would have.
Yeah. But yeah, these guys, so you talked about perhaps being underfed when you were trying to do all this performance.
I was always a little anorexic when I was racing. You know, I always wanted to be, I want to be super lean and I want to be, you know, I would definitely not, there's no way I ate enough. There's no way.
Yeah. Probably especially protein. And so therefore you're catabolic most of the time because you're on the bike seat for 5 hours and pounding the roads for another couple hours. And so maybe that's, the lack of veins in the stomach, Blumenfeld's signature move.
I'm so intrigued by, you know, and they're pretty open about telling what they do. And it's really interesting to me to hear how they do, you know, because that kind of throws the whole, you know, get fat adapted, ketogenic, you know, because I did that for so long. Like,
oh, you did?
Know, I did that. I tried. I know I'm my own experiment. I try everything. Yeah. I want to see. The only thing I haven't tried is the carnivore thing. I haven't done that, but I've done vegan. I've done, you know, I try everything for like a year. You know, I'm like, okay, I have to give it a chance. And I look at my blood work and I kind of go, okay, how do I feel? You know, the keto, I train too much. I never felt that great doing it. I mean, I could go on 8 hour rides or whatever I wanted to do as long as I kept it aerobic. But if I, you know, tried to race my motocross guys on the VersaClimber, you know, I was like a nightmare. You know, I just didn't have the power. And I didn't mind eating that way. I have no problem. Same with even when I was a vegan for a year, I was like, I don't mind eating this way. You know, it's I can kind of switch over to whatever. My body's pretty adapted. I never had any stomach problems or my weight. I never got that much leaner on it, one or the other. I just was always kind of, I mean, everything, you know, now I'm kind of in that middle where I eat probably, I'm protein centric. I probably eat 150, 160 grams a day. And then I kind of adjust my carbs, kind of like the Norwegian, like depending on if I work out a lot, I eat a lot of sweet potatoes and, you know, I'm a pretty good eater. I don't eat a lot of junk. I don't eat bars or goos or anything like that. But I do eat, you know, quinoa and like sweet potatoes and a lot of some fruit. And, you know, I get, you know, if I'm doing, when I have the moto guys here, like they're coming next week, I have to work out a ton. Like, I mean, those guys are fit. I mean, talking about it, those guys are incredibly
People don't even realize, like, the motorcycle is some of the fittest guys around.
35-minute motos. Yeah. And their heart rate's 93.4% the entire race. And they don't realize those guys are fit as hell. And so when they come, you know, I have to take them. It's a one time a year. I actually have to, it's like a race for me. I have to train for them to come. So I have to like, oh shit, they're coming next week. I got to like do all this VersaClimber and I got to climb Gibraltar and I got to be able to, you know, to hang with them. And so it's like a whole, it's like my, for 6 weeks, I've been doing like it's almost like I'm training for a race just to have those guys come. So, because they're 22 years old, 23 at the top of their game. So I'm like, you know, at the beginning, they're in their beginning season, but you know, it's great because by 6 weeks that I can't, you know, they're just dusting me, but you know, but at the beginning I can make them suffer at the beginning. And, but you know, they lift weight, you know, they do everything. That's a sport that's, I think the fitness of those guys, they have to be strong. They got to be stable. They got to be super fit aerobically. It's a intense, and then, you know, you can die at any minute if you're wrong. So you got the adrenaline factor there too. So that's one of my favorite sports to train, just because there's so many variables involved in their training that they have to, you know, mental, physical, you know, everything.
Yeah, definitely all around athlete, but especially with that endurance that I don't think the audience appreciates when they're absorbing the impact every second on the bike. And I know there's some motor people, but this is probably as hard as the Tour de France, you know?
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So the diet stuff, as people who've listened to my show know, I've been doing a lot of recent reflections. And one of them is the idea that doing things like keto, restricting carbs, restricting the time periods that you eat has to be counted as a stress factor to the 100%. Body, as does training. And so when you're stacking those together, I feel like a lot of people are possibly erring in, you know, overloading the stress mechanisms of the body accordingly.
I agree. Especially, if you're doing cold plunge and all that stuff, like you said, all of that just adds up. And, you know, I like this stuff, but I've never done it that much. But I did do time restricted eating for a long time, and I did. And I don't know, I just, now I feel better when I just eat, when I feed myself more. Because I'm busy all day. I mean, I'm handing people weights, I'm running around, I never sit. I'm always handing people weights and, you know, putting weights on bars and taking them off. And then I work out myself and I work out with clients. So just like I said, I'm come full circle. I'm like, okay, I just keep my protein high and I just eat, you know, my calories depending on, you know, what I'm doing that day or that week, whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's also, of course, you're going to, it's sensible to time extra carbs with extra workout. But then we got to think about, well, the day after you had a big day with the Moto guys is another great opportunity to overload and make sure that you recover.
Yeah. So yeah, the eating is, I have a pretty, you know, my energy has been pretty good. So I definitely eating more has been, and I didn't gain any weight really either, which I thought, I feel like I'm eating like 1,000 more calories a day just because I'm not restricting. And I eat super healthy. You know, I don't eat anything. I'm not a chip, and you know, I don't eat junk food. But you know, I just eat more volume of food, you know, and I'm feeling better, you know, at my age. You know, I'm the same exact age, I'm 57. Right. And you know, of course, we'll talk probably about this, but your training, I've had to change my training a lot because I see, you know, where I'm headed. I want to be 80 years old and I always tell my wife, I'm like, when I, you know, because we used to go to like Sun Valley or Mammoth, and I'd see all these old grizzly guys in the gym, like 80, buff and tan and like wrinkled. And I'm like, that's what I want to be when I'm retired. I'm 80. I want to be like a ski resort, just hiking and working out all day. And I want to be able to, you know, if I would have kept training like I was, like, I still can't believe there's people that we both know that are still racing Ironmans like than when we raced.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do they do? I love the Ironman, the whole thing, but you couldn't pay me to do one of those again right now. There's no way. Like, I don't have any urge to do that at all.
Hey man, how's your sexual function? Oh, uncomfortable talking about it? Look, we talk about our injured knees, our belly fat, so it's time to get focused on function. I want to tell you about GainsWave. This is a cutting-edge protocol where a handheld device sends low-intensity shock waves into your penile blood vessels to stimulate a healing response and promote increased blood circulation and the growth of new blood vessels. A skilled practitioner puts the GainsWave magic wand onto your magic wand, and after a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results. GainsWave reports an 80% success rate. Now, we know that popping pills is a popular penile protocol, but when you're working with clogged pipes, you just get a temporary band-aid effect when you take prescription drugs. GainsWave addresses the cause of age-related decline by stimulating growth factors and activating dormant stem cells. Translation, stronger, harder, more sustainable erections. I learned about GainsWave from my podcast guest, Dr. Judson Brandeis at the Brandeis MD Clinic in Northern California, and there's a robust network of GainsWave providers that you can find on their website near you. Complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, and while it's great for ED, GainsWave is for any man that wants to combat the effects of aging and get a little boost for your A-game. So please visit GainsWave.com/Brad. That's GainsWave.com/BRAD to find a practitioner in your area, and you can take advantage of my special promotion. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. You have nothing to lose and lots to gain from GainsWave.com/Brad. Yeah, I don't think it correlates at all with total comprehensive functional full body fitness nor longevity. And there's probably a way to do it with minimizing the damage that you describe from your younger years and I describe. But At the same token, it feels to me, and maybe this is a transition where we can converse about all the different ways you can train, but it seems like active people can go get that A plus in cardio really easily when you add up the hiking, the biking to the farmer's market, the proper steady state cardio workout that you do if you're interested in that stuff, and the stuff you do in the gym and the sprinting you do on the beach. That stuff counts toward the A plus. But then we have to talk about resistance load and functioning of the joints and the connective tissue and just preserving muscle mass.
Exactly. I mean, I always tell people, like, okay, if you want to do an Ironman, doing one, great. Bucket list. I'm happy to train you. Go do it.
We should rename it Ironman Bucket List organization. Yeah, they wouldn't like that.
Yeah. But, you know, my training now, I mean, I love, I still, like, I don't think, maybe other than you, no one likes working out more than I do. I every day I wake up, I can't wait to fucking train.
Wow.
You know, I love, every bit of it still. And I think clients see that in me, and I think they kind of feed off it a lot, because they see, I just can't wait. You know, as soon as they leave the gym, they see me strip my clothes off, and I'm like, fuck, I'm taking my dog for a run or sprints or whatever. But I've definitely had to slow down. I mean, I do a lot of low end stuff, but I do a lot of alactic type training, like sprints on the bike, like 10 seconds on, 50 seconds off, or I'll do it for 40 minutes sometimes, you know, like 10 on, 40 off. You know, I can hold about 700, 800 watts, and I 50 seconds, my heart rate never goes, you know, above 130 ish or so. And I wake up the next day and I feel incredible. You know, I mean, I wouldn't start at 40 minutes, of course, but I do a lot of those. I'll do one day of those on the bike, one day, you know, on the beach, hill sprints, or I keep everything. A couple days a week, I do really short sprint. I just like sprint. I mean, for me, I mean, I have like two fast switch muscle fibers in my body, maybe. So I like doing it because it's my week. I feel good doing it, and I feel good the next day. And I still do a lot. I mean, I still, my zone, you know, they call it zone two now, you know, but.
Yeah, who named that, Peter? Was that you?
I have no idea.
Did you make that up? I mean, what the hell, man?
It irritates me because everyone goes, I knew my zone two today. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, we did this in like 1980, you know, with Moffitone. You know, we did, you know, I don't even know, whatever, Moff, whatever you call it. But I do, I mean, I can still hold 250 watts at that heart rate, which is pretty good. I try to keep that up. And then I do one day a week with my, you know, I have this group of Second Journey, this class is called Second Journey. They're all a bunch of guys our age that are former athletes, super fit. We did stuff in the gym. And then we always, one day a week, we have like just an acid bath race, you know, and we get like four guys on a team. We just race on the Bursa climbers or the bikes or whatever. And it's just 20, 30 minutes of just mayhem. And we all just, and that's the one time a week I get after it, but that's it. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, and I've stayed really fit. I mean, I can climb Gibraltar. I mean, you can do all that stuff. I just keep it, you know, I just don't do that much long endurance anymore. Maybe once every couple of weeks, I'll go like across the ridge up Gibraltar and over and then 3 or 4 hours, but not every week. And I've gotten into that rucking, you know, Michael Easter, my friend, sent me one of those backpacks, and I've been going, you know, 3 hour hikes in the hills with that thing on. It's like, it's incredible. It's hard, you know. It's like doing walking lunges, you know, for 40 minutes up a hill. You know the trails in Santa Barbara, they're steep, you know, so you go back there for 3 hours, and you know, it's funny because my heart rate never goes up really. It gets, you know, it'll get to 120 or so, but the muscular part of it is hard. It's so different. Like, when I first started doing it, I got sore in places I never thought. I'd been way high in the glutes, but I've had no problem with my back or knees or anything. So it's one of those things I've kind of just discovered, and I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. You know, it's fun.
I'm sure you're spending a lot of time doing resistance exercises in the gym too.
Oh yeah, lifting. That's probably my number one thing I do. I'd pick lifting over cardio any day for me now. I like lifting. I mean, I like to, you know, I always tell people, like, if you're losing body mass, you're basically dying. I mean, it's like, you know, the less, and I've seen all these studies now where, like, you know, body mass and cognitive is kind of correlated, like the more body mass you have. I've been been reading on PubMed some stuff on that and other stuff. And
yeah, muscle mass, muscle strength, muscle mass correlated with brain function. It's a pretty scary one if you don't care about this enough. You're not a gym rat. Okay, fine. How do you like using your brain? Yeah.
Yeah. So well, that's been, I just love lifting. I've ever since I've been a kid, I've loved lifting. And I just love the science of it and trying to keep myself strong. And I'm not fancy. I do probably 5 or 6 exercises. I do pull-ups, I do push-ups, bench press swings, deadlifts. Sometimes I'll do in warm-ups, I'll do a lot of different moves like side lunging and more functional stuff in my warm-up just to do different moves. But my main lifts pretty much stay the same all the time. I just keep them strong. I always want to be able to deadlift, 1.5 my body weight, 350 pounds. I mean, I'm like 160. So if I can deadlift 350 or so, I'm happy on a regular bar, not a hex bar.
That's double, right?
Yeah, so I can, and I just like to be able, do 10 pull-ups, and I've learned a lot with pull-ups, though. A lot of guys can't handle it. A lot of my older guys, I've fucked up so many times and done pull-ups, and they get tendonitis. And so I'm careful with people on pull-ups, just because it's such a, because once they get that, it's really hard to get rid of.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a terrible, I had it from golfing and tennis elbow. I couldn't do pull-ups for a long time. Yeah. It's amazing, but it seems like a very functional and important skill to develop, but that ramping up is something that's super delicate.
So now I always start my older guys with like a band, using a band to help them.
Yeah.
I think it's like anything, you got to get your tendons have to get strong enough to be able to handle. So I have them just do like 2 or 3 reps, and then even if they could do 7, I'm like, just stop at 3, because you're going to start using shit you shouldn't go over that. Mm. And then over time, they can, I've learned from being dumb and say, let's try to do 100 pull-ups and just sit there till you do 100. That's just dumb. That's the recipe for disaster. But lifting is I love lifting. I just, like I said, our friend Tom Hodge, he just rails me because he just thinks I'm like this gym rat.
Loves being out there all day doing these crazy extreme, even over age 50, he's doing some amazing stuff.
I know. Yeah. I call him the walking free radical.
Well, that's interesting. You described that you have your go-to favorite exercises and you're not obsessed with variation, because we've had this this notion in fitness where you got to confuse your muscles. Otherwise, you're going to level off and stagnate. And I'm thinking back to Jack LaLanne when he did, 1,000. What did he do? 1,000 sit-ups and 1,000 push-ups before 8 a.m. every day. It's like, He wasn't confusing anything. He was just knocking out 1,000 of each. Yeah, I don't think he had any problem.
I'll go from 4 weeks of like front squats on a slant board to 4 weeks of Zercher squats, holding here. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go deadlifts, traditional deadlifts, hex bar. I'll switch it up, So, same but different, I call it. It's, same but a little, just a little different, And, of course, the load range and how you load it is big. Factor of how you see the strain. I mean, if you do 3 sets of 10 deadlifts, much different than if you do 5 sets of 2. I mean, it's a big difference. So sometimes I'll go in a little higher. I mean, I'll switch it up. I tend to keep the same thing, for 4 or 5 weeks. I don't really vary it that much, and then I'll switch it up every cycle. I just don't think, I don't agree with people that come in and just they think, do you want results or do you want cute? Like, what do you want? If you want cute, I can make every workout different and it's fun and, it looks good on Instagram. But if you want to get strong and actually get somewhere, you got to do the same thing and you got to, learn how to tension your body and lock in. It's a skill. And as you can see people doing a deadlift and, that guy looks really locked in and then it's like a tennis stroke. You can see really bad ones and guys in the gym. Yeah. I'm still learning things about deadlifts. Oh shit, I didn't know just pushing your big toe in the ground a little more and like pushing through the ground a little harder, like it's like you're pushing away from just little tiny cues that make that's what I love about strength training is you're always figuring out stuff that I always feel like I know this much and I have my basic principles, but it's like okay, there's always so much more you can learn on everything,
Well, that's the sign of a truly elite practitioner, realizing how little you know. And I feel that way about diet because I've been obsessed with it and writing books. And then wake up one day and realize, you know, I'm rethinking everything and changing course.
Same thing. This whole listening to the Norwegian thing just fucking threw me for a loop. I'm like, oh, fuck. And then I started eating more and getting, you know, and thinking about that, keeping my energy balance positive. And I'm like, oh my God, like, why didn't I think about this before? I was just worried about how lean I looked, you know, instead of how do I feel? Like, how do I feel in the gym? And, you know, how do I, you know, how am I performing? You know, like I said, you learn little tidbits. And, you know, I think that's why people probably love you, because you admit, like, okay, I tried this and I thought that was it, but there might be a better way out there that I can do. And that's, I love that. People just follow on your journey. That's what people like about me. Mm. It's like, you know, they'll like, you know, I'll say, okay, here, we're going to try this workout program, you know, here, I've been playing with this, let's try this. And especially, you know, but with the CEO, you know, back to like the training, like the CEO guys, you got to keep it simple. Their lives, you know, I can't say to them, okay, ice bath in the morning, you know, do this, do that. You know, if I can get them to do some low end cardio on their own, some weights, and then meditation has become a big thing in my toolbox. It's funny because it came like right before COVID. I was in LA. I had a gym in LA before COVID, and within 1 week, Headspace, the guys that run Headspace, came in and asked me to train them. And Joe Dispenza, one of the biggest, you know, he lives here. And within 1 week, and I'm like, okay, the universe is telling me something here, you know. And so I started working with both of them, and I'm really close friends with Joe. He lives here. And he talked me into going in one of his week-long meditation centers, and it literally changed my life. Like, literally. Like, I mean, now I'll pick meditation almost over a second workout. I mean, it's just...
Wow.
I've slept better. I mean, I'm more centered in my brain. Everything, it's changed me. Like, I don't want to sound like a hoodoo guru, like a woo-woo, but it did. I'm just saying that, I mean, I'm a guy that can't shut his brain off, that's always moving, you know, full ADD, like always, you know, can't sit still. You know, always, you know, trying to move, like, oh shit, I got a cancellation. Oh, I can go on the bike for 20 minutes. You know, that was just me. But he just kept saying, hey, come, you got to come. And then I finally went and was like, oh my God, wow. Okay. You know, cause in, you know, one day we meditated 5 hours straight and it felt like 30 minutes. And I'm like, okay. So now I just use his stuff, and I go every, you know, I work, and when I close the gym, I just go in this room and 30 minutes, I just do this. You know, one of his things, and it's for the CEO guys, you know, the number one thing I see is they don't sleep well. You know, they fall asleep, and then they all wait. A lot of them wake up at like 3 a.m.
Really, a CEO attribute, huh?
Oh, 100%. I see that across the board with a lot of them, and so, you know, with them, you got to look at their lifestyle and go, okay, I can usually figure them out pretty quick. You know, like how much time are they going to put into this, and what's going to throw them overboard? And I got to just kind of form a program on what I think they can, you know, reading them is very important. Now, some guys, if I gave them like something one of my other guys did, they would run for the hills. They'd go, fuck this. I'm not, this is ridiculous. So I can't do the ice baths and the peptide shots or, you know, any of that stuff. You know, it's like, okay, let's eat well, exercise, you know, get your, and they just need a roadmap. And, you know, if you give it to them, they'll do really well with it, you know, and they'll lose weight, and they'll, you know, the CEO thing, that's kind of become my net, you know, I love that part of it, because it's, you know, you can change their whole life. You know, athlete, you get like this much, you know, you're trying to change this much, but these guys, you can completely change their whole outlook on how they look at, you know, their executive function, their energy, everything. And you know, once you give them that roadmap and you show them how much better they feel, they kind of run with it.
Oh my gosh, they've already conquered so many other challenges, and then they have a starting point with you to, you know, discover things that are truly important about, you know, improving their overall health status and, you know, perspective.
Yeah, I mean, energy. You've seen it. You can't, you know, you've done a lot for this diet. So, I mean, you look at them and you go, okay, let's just drink 8 glasses of water a day first, you know, just that, anything. Okay, let's cut this, you know, just slow, you know, changed, you know, like if I went and said, okay, no this, no that, you can't ever have that. They can do it for like 2 weeks, but then I, you know, they won't do it.
Yeah.
So it's just finding, it's a puzzle to find what, you know, now not everyone, you know, not everyone's the same. You got to figure out, you know, got to figure out what makes them tick and like, okay, how am I going to slide into this guy's psyche and make him do what, you know, what he needs to do to get healthy.
Get some market share in the busy daily schedule of the business leader. So tell us how you dreamed up Platinum Fitness and the unique operation that you have there. And you talked about some of your clientele being the high performing business type, but then you're also working with a lot of elite athletes and how that all blends together.
Yeah, I seem to have Platinum, I opened that in like 1997 about. And we started in Montecito, and it just kind of, you know, I was going to go to physical therapy school, and one of my clients that I was training talks me out of it and goes, hey, this is your passion. I can see it. Just so wow. We rented a building, we opened it, and I started training a lot of people. You know, it was great because I would have been a little bit of fish out of water if I just did endurance and I didn't have that strength background. I really think having that and the volleyball really put me ahead of a lot of people because I studied those powerlifter guys. Like, I mean, I was a sponge. I'd stay in there all, I was like 13, 14, 15. Wow. And I would just stay in there and just watch every little thing they did. And so I learned a lot so I kind of was ahead of the curve on, I already gotten through a lot of the bullshit in the training. I kind of knew what was legit and what wasn't. And then Lance came into town, like doing the tour, and I met him through a mutual friend, and we were like kindred souls, and we started training, and I trained him when he was in the off season, and then he came, when he was right before he did his second coming, you know, when he did the tour the second time through in 2009 maybe, and he lived here for a while, and then he started bringing me to, you know, he introduced me to, you know, at the time he was like Jesus, you know, we'd go anywhere, and it was like, you know, parting of the seas. And so he introduced me a lot of very big wigs in LA, and I started driving to LA. I was very ambitious. You know, I always wanted to go higher than just the trainer in Santa Barbara. So I took him up on all these people in LA, very big wig CEOs and athletes, and so I movie stars and singers, and I lived that world for like 10 years. And so, and then I had the gym up here still, and it became, you know, I just got a lot of, you know, trainers. I'd always handpick my kind of guys and do, we had a kind of like a brand, and it just kind of evolved and became, you know, what it is today, where it's just kind of, you know, stuff we've been doing, you know, started a long time ago, and just kind of, you know, it's still evolving. Like I said, it's not, so it's always kind of going a little different ways, you know, and people like that.
You talk about, yeah, you were so ambitious and driven and grinding it down to LA. Now, do you feel like you're in a more reflective phase in your career?
No, not yet. I'm still, no. Because, you know, the thing is, every single, you know, wealthy person has moved to Santa Barbara. Like, literally. I mean, so many, it's like the hot spot to live right now. Everyone has moved up here. So a lot of my clients, you know, and I put all that time into LA. And so anytime anyone moves from LA or anywhere, they hear my name first. And I'm like, oh, I can't like give up this guy. You know, this guy is like, look at who this guy is, you know? And so I'm one that has a hard time saying no. So I'm still working, you know, 10-hour days, you know, a lot of the times, but I love what I do. I mean, my wife just goes, Peter, you basically just hang out with your friends all day, you know? But I'm making my friends better. I think people just know I care. I do. Yeah. I mean, if I take someone on, I glom on, and I'm like, I really care about what they're doing, and I want to see them, you know, get better. That's to a fault sometimes, you know. And I'll be at a party, and someone will say, oh, I can't get, and I'll, you know, I'm like, don't get away, get away. You know, I don't go talk, you know, because I want to go, oh, I know exactly what you should do, you know. You know, you can only, as you know, you can only help so many people. You can't glom onto anything, or else I'll start spreading myself way too thin, and then it does nobody good. So I need to always learn to take some time out for myself and do some stuff, or else, you know, that balance is, I've always had a, you know, trouble with finding that balance of work and family and the whole thing.
Well, it's great that you love what you're doing. I think
young
listeners with career ambitions can pick up some great tips, which is, you know, your passion comes through and your total immersion into this. That's, you know, that's the sign of a meaningful, rich life. Even if you do feel like you're too busy at times or whatever, we can always recalibrate. But, you know, to wake up every day, can't wait to do your own workouts and to train other people. You're in the right mix, man. That's awesome.
No, and I always tell the trainers, like, people feed off your energy and your intensity. Like, if you go in there, go, oh, two reps, you know, okay, go do that one. Yeah. No, I mean, they're going to be like that. And I found myself, even when I'm tired at the end of the day, I like, sometimes I have to go in the bathroom and slap myself in the face because, fuck, these guys are paying you a lot of money. Get out there and fucking give it to them. Like, yeah. Because, you know, give them your energy because, you know, if you just go out there and you're just kind of, go do, you know, like, you know, it's just, they feed off me or, you know, whoever they're training with. I mean, I can feel it. Like, I really know that. Like, if I'm not on, they're not on in their workout either. You know, yeah, so I always tell trainers, that's a big, you know, they feed off what, you know, how you are and, you know, how you're, they know what, you know, they always want to know, what'd you do this weekend? You know, they always want to know, like, what I did and, like, now why are you sprinting up that hill so many times? Or, you know, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm just trying out this new Swedish alactic protocol or whatever, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's true when you're at the dental hygienist, but it's especially true when there's a lot of momentum against being healthy, active, fit lifestyle. And so, you know, some people have trouble getting motivated. They need the trainer to kind of perform and to model, you know, how awesome everything is, even if it's your seventh client of the day and your own energy is getting a little drained.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I have what keeps me, I like the mentorship part. I have a nonprofit for high school kids that want to play in college, and a lot of like Latino kids or a lot of kids that can't afford training. I trained them a lot, you know, back, you know, 8 years ago. I mean, I've done probably, you know, it's funny, for the first time, I have a kid of a kid.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like, oh, he walked in, like, oh, no. But anyway, so it's a nonprofit where the kids just, you know, I was sick of chasing money from the parents. You know, I was just like, you know, they couldn't afford it. I mean, $300 or whatever to, you know, some families was like a lot. So I just, you know, a lot of my wealthy clients will give, you know, scholarships to all these kids. Mm-hmm. And I love the mentorship because I see them all the way through high school. And I get to watch them in college. And it's that's probably one of my, I give about 2 hours, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, you know, for the high school kids in the afternoon. It's probably one of the most rewarding things I did because, you know, you can change those kids, or, you know, you give them some purpose and some structure. And, you know, I always say no assholes allowed, you know, like you can't be, you know, I always try to make them, you know, okay, you guys be good human beings first, because so to be here, you know, I'm giving my time to you, you know, you're not giving it your all, you're not coming here to goof around.
Yeah,
because it's fun. And so that's become a big part of my, you know, as I get older, like you said, I like to do more of that, and where I can give, you know, I've done enough now where I can give away some time and do stuff with these kids.
Right on, Peter. You're doing great stuff up there. I can't wait to drop in and visit you when I'm ready for one of your legendary workouts.
No, I need
workouts.
To sprint with you. I need to get dropped by you so I can see what the level of a 57-year-old really should.
You know, what's so fun is, like, you know, like you described, you have two fast twitch muscle fibers in your body. And of course, you know, we were built for endurance. That's what we drifted to as young people. But now I'm competing in stuff that I might not be genetically adapted to. My son watched me at a high jump meet and he goes, Dad, you don't look like any of those Olympic high jumpers. I'm like, yeah, you're right. But it's just a challenge. And I think we need those throughout life, you know? Yeah,
I agree. I mean, that's do something that scares you. I like that, you know, because the sprinting and all that stuff is, you know, is fun for me because I'm so bad at it, but I like it, you know.
Yeah, right on. Okay, so how do we connect with you and learn about what you're doing at Platinum Fitness?
The website, you know, platinumfitnesssummerlin.com, or I'm Platinum SB Platinum Fitness on Instagram. I'm not a big social media. I try to be, but it's tough. It's tough to do that world. I think I posted once yesterday in 2 years or something. But, you know, it's more, you know, I it's anyone that comes to Santa Barbara, I always say, hey, just come by the gym and just, you know, come. I have a great gym. I have a little Airbnb upstairs. I'm like, hey, just come and work out if you're in town. Like, I mean, I'm pretty much down there by myself. Like, you know, anyone who wants to come in to do cardio or workout, just stop.
Right on. It's a destination. You got to do it. Tourism attraction. Yeah. Peter Park, everybody. Thanks for listening. Dun, dun, dun. Greetings, my fitness-minded listeners. I want to acquaint you with the Primal Fitness Expert Certification Program, the most comprehensive home study multimedia fitness education course in the world. If you want to enhance your personal knowledge of all aspects of leading a healthy, active, fit lifestyle, this total immersion course will be life-changing. I'm the lead instructor and author of the course, and we have 14 chapters of extensive written content with over 100 accompanying videos covering topics such as general everyday movement, including micro workouts and dynamic workstation tips, the full experience of gym-based strength training and all the different modalities, a complete presentation on all aspects of sprinting, both running and low impact options, an assortment of high intensity interval training and high intensity repeat training strategies, a detailed education on the principles and practical application of aerobic endurance training, and extensive commentary, the most you will find in any publication, on all aspects and symptoms of overtraining and burnout. We even have fascinating peripheral topics like integrating nasal diaphragmatic breathing, dynamic stretching, injury prevention, and developing a peak performance mindset. It's really something, this course. We went all out for over 2 years with a great team to develop this amazing home-based fitness education for you. And you get one-on-one expert email support and private Facebook group connection throughout your studies to ensure that you absorb everything optimally and you pass your series of exams and get certified. So go to primalhealthcoach.com/Brad to enjoy a very special limited time. And I'm not kidding. This is a big time discount just for you. 25% off your tuition. A fantastic premium offer at primalhealthcoach.com/Brad for the most comprehensive fitness course you can ever find. I hope you enjoyed this episode and encourage you to check out the Primal Endurance Mastery course at primalendurance.fit. This is the ultimate online educational experience where you can learn from the world's great coaches and trainers, diet, peak performance, and recovery experts, as well as lengthy one-on-one interviews from several of the greatest endurance athletes of all time, not published anywhere else. It's a major educational experience with hundreds of videos, but you can get free access to a mini course with an ebook summary of the Primal Endurance approach and 9 step-by-step videos on how to become a Primal Endurance athlete. This mini course will help you develop a strong basic understanding of this all-encompassing approach to endurance training that includes primal-aligned eating to escape carbohydrate dependency and enhance fat metabolism, building an aerobic base with comfortably paced workouts, strategically introducing high-intensity strength and sprint workouts, emphasizing rest recovery and annual periodization, and finally, cultivating an intuitive approach to training instead of the usual robotic approach of fixed weekly workout schedules. Just head over to primalendurance.fit and learn all about the course and how we can help you go faster and preserve your health while you're at it.